Talo Falava, you're with Dateline from RNZ Pacific. I'm Johnny Blades. Coming up.
It creates levels of inaccessibility for those who need the vaccine.
The scramble for access to COVID vaccines is on. How will Pacific countries fare?
The fundamental gap in the health of PNG democracy.
Do PNG's ongoing political tussles highlight the need for a new system?
To be there with the Prime Minister talking over the big issues for our community.
And Pacifica representation seen as being central to a more diverse New Zealand Parliament. Governments all around the world are scrambling to secure access to COVID-19 vaccines for their citizens. Over the past few weeks, companies Pfizer, Moderna and Janssen Pharmaceutica have all released results of significantly effective COVID-19 vaccines. These are important breakthroughs in the pandemic, but what does it mean for smaller nations who may not have the financial ability to be first in, first served? Lillian Hanley has more.
The question of equitable and affordable access to vaccines for all countries is a matter of major importance to Doctors Without Borders. Its executive director, Jennifer Tierney, says the pharmaceutical industry is taking a business-as-usual approach in the development of the vaccine in order to protect their own intellectual property and profitability.
The problem there is that that means it creates levels of inaccessibility for those who need the vaccine, as we all do around the world. So it creates an opportunity for developed nations and nations with, you know, higher GDP to access those treatments, vaccines and cures before developing countries or people living in countries with lower GDP might.
The New Zealand government has an in-principle agreement with Janssen Pharmaceutica, which would see up to 5 million doses of the vaccine delivered by the end of 2022. In a statement, Dr. Peter Crabtree, chair of New Zealand's COVID-19 Vaccine Strategy Task Force, has said supporting Pacific countries to have early access to those safe vaccines was a priority, but it is yet to be made clear how this will be achieved.
New Zealand has signed up to the COVAX facility seeking coverage for 50% of the population of the realm, which covers New Zealand, the Cook Islands, Niue and Tokelau. It's likely that some of this will be funded by the aid program, but the details are still being worked through and decisions are yet to be made. Timing of delivery is complex and some vaccine candidates will be more suitable for the Pacific than others.
The World Health Organization's COVAX facility is tasked with providing equitable access to vaccines.
The COVAX pillar aims to ensure that every country gets fair and equitable access to eventual COVID-19 vaccines. Wealthier countries have a greater chance of gaining access to successful vaccines. And by pooling their buying power rather than competing against one another, they enable investment in factories, so more doses are available as soon as a vaccine becomes available.
The idea with COVAX is to provide 2 billion doses of safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines throughout the world by the end of 2021, with both rich and poor nations participating. Self-financing economies will be able to buy in and secure enough doses for their populations proportional to the amount they use to buy into the program. Other economies will be guaranteed doses to vaccinate up to 20% of their population until further doses become available. In the Pacific, this includes Kiribati, Micronesia, Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands, Vanuatu, the Marshall Islands, Samoa, Tonga and Tuvalu. Doctors Without Borders is hoping to encourage more transparency in how the facility will distribute vaccines.
Right now, I don't have any background information as to how much money has been raised or how the money is going to be used to cover off the needs of developing countries. So while the donor nations into the COVAX facility will be sure within the facility to get access, it's unclear if they come first or how the prioritization is going to be. So we've been calling on every country that's participating in the COVAX facility to again make sure that there are controls within the facility for guaranteeing equal access, whether or not you're a rich or a less rich nation.
Meanwhile, Dr. Crabtree emphasized that most Pacific Island countries will be eligible to access vaccines.
Our support for the COVAX facility advanced market commitment is to ensure lower income countries can access vaccines. We're working closely with other partners, particularly Australia, to ensure a coordinated and smooth approach to the rollout of vaccines in the Pacific.
He added that the Ministry of Health will collaborate with Pacific governments and regional partners such as the World Health Organization and UNICEF on vaccine distribution and immunisation planning. For RNZ Pacific, Ko Lillian Hanley, aho.
Papua New Guinea's current political crisis has sparked renewed discussion about whether the country's system of government should change. The opposition's gone to the Supreme Court with a legal challenge against last week's hastily called sitting of Parliament when the government adjourned the House until April. It came days after the opposition gained a majority in Parliament and prepared for a vote of no confidence against Prime Minister James Marape. A PhD scholar specialising in PNG constitutional law, Dr. Baal Karma, told me that a review of the system is sometimes necessary in order to improve it.
Again, that review needs to be one of consultation, one of really diagnosing the issues at hand and asking questions of why things are not working. And I think if the bodies who are charged with bringing out reforms, if they've done research, if they've come to a conclusion that things need to be changed, I think it needs to be a national dialogue that needs to happen all across the country and not pushed by any political sides. It has to be one that's based on well-informed decision and researching and participation from the public.
I've noted people saying perhaps it's time to look at the Prime Ministership being popularly elected.
It's very interesting. The founders of the PNG Constitution, some of them have advocated strongly for having the Republic system in Papua New Guinea, allowing the leader of the country to be elected directly by the people. But that didn't carry forward. But there is that sentiment that has already established there before. On one end, we have those issues which this reform can now reflect and can address in terms of party politics, in terms of these tensions between different groups at the national level. People can directly vote in someone, and therefore that person can become the ultimate leader of the people and have the stability. On the other hand, when you talk about people voting directly, it also brings about the issue of, you know, what are the risks? Will there be a fair play, or does the tribal nature of Papua New Guinean society and notion of regionalism, you know, there's this coastal, there's this highlanders, Papuans, how would that play out when it comes to voting something like a national leader? Will they have political tensions among those groups that are already there?
And doesn't PNG finally need to do something about having no women in Parliament? I mean, is that something that the current crop of politicians are serious about?
I think it is one of the fundamental missing parcel in PNG democracy. And leaders must soon, rather than later, realise this, that women representative in Parliament is a fundamental gap in the health of PNG democracy. And so that shouldn't be a question of political parties and tussling between who gets to do what on this front. It should be an issue of national importance, and it should hang in national consciousness of leaders. They have a duty to ensure that women who are critical to the well-being of the nation, a foundational member of the country, in every aspect of the society, at every level, are given the equal opportunity and provided special provisions because of the context of the country. The opportunities are not equally distributed to them. So there has to come to some ways where special consensus are made to ensure that these members of the society who are fundamental to the well-being of the country are given that opportunity to be heard at the national level in the House of Parliament. So it is something that every prime minister, every leader must take ownership of. And I think James Marape, given his openness, considering issues so far and his level of transparency into accessing directly public consents, I think he would be best placed in his term to really bring some action on this if time and other things permit.
Dr. Bal Karma. The recent growth in Pacifica representation in New Zealand's parliament is part of an ongoing journey. That's according to the woman who's been appointed New Zealand's police minister, but also in charge of the building and construction sector. Cook Islander Munukoa Poto-Williams, who was the MP for Christchurch East, was re-elected under the ruling Labour Party banner at the recent general election. Williams is also Associate Minister for Children and Public Housing, and she's one of three Pacifica MPs in the Cabinet. She told Christine Ravoy, while there are opportunities for the government's Pacifica MPs, there are high expectations and big challenges ahead.
We've got in this parliament so much more representation and we are so much more diverse. And that's due largely to the fact that people have come before us. And I think I'm just a step in that journey to be there with the Prime Minister talking over the big issues for our community as well as for the whole of New Zealand is a huge honour and a privilege, representing all of New Zealand, but also valuing that we all bring a perspective. So, you know, I bring not only my Cook Island community, I also bring the work that I've done in supporting people who have found themselves in some quite difficult and desperate situations, particularly around violence or around mental unwellness.
You're one of the few Pacifica women in Cabinet at the moment. What does it mean to you?
There's a whole lot of different communities and population groups within that. Carmel Cipollone and I are colleagues and friends, but we're also from the Pacific. And I have to credit Carmel for one thing in particular, and that's for her encouragement of me. And I had long looked to her as you know, a role model to me before I even got into this work. And I always had admired how she could be intrinsically herself, very much steeped in her Pacific values, but a member of parliament for all of her, you know, for the people that she represented. And I think that's an important message I want to get across to everyone, that we are about Pacific Aotearoa, you know, the Pacific people in Aotearoa, but we are also about Aotearoa. That is who we're here to represent. And if we can lay a pathway for others to come through and continue with, you know, being the light for other Pacific women or Pacific men or, you know, people from, you know, other communities, you know, then that's our job. Well done, I think.
Christchurch East constituency, you won the seat with over a 14,000 vote majority during the elections. Now, do you believe that, you know, there's a new stronger voice for Christchurch from the new Labour stronghold?
Yes, we do. As Christchurch MPs, we've been talking about what that means for our city and our region, you know, stronger representation. It also places expectation on our shoulders from our communities and our constituents that we speak with a strong, united voice for the issues of Canterbury and Christchurch. We've got some residual issues, you know, residual earthquake issues that, you know, kind of need finalising, but there are other issues as well. And we've been in the centre of some quite significant events that, you know, our Muslim community, you know, fronted just a couple of years ago, just a year or so ago. So we know that we've got some unique perspectives as well. We're always very keen as Christchurch MPs to put a South Island lens on any of the discussions. So those are very important things. I have to say about the Pacifica community in Christchurch that we operate as a pan-Pacific group. We are not as big as the populations in Auckland. We do tend to work together much more as a collective. And while that has some real bonuses for us as a group, it also means that we looked to some of our heritage homelands or some of the groups in Auckland perhaps to help us with some of the key areas of cultural practice that we may sometimes forego. So just forgive us if you come to Christchurch and you have a pan-Pacific kind of welcome as opposed to one that you're expecting from your village, but we do tend to do things much more collectively in Christchurch.
Porto Williams speaking with Christine Ravoy. And that ends this edition of Dateline. Thanks for joining us. There's more on our website, rnzi.com. Till next time, tōwhā.